This week on the GPP Activism and Corporate Governance Newsletter, new study argues that dual-class structures are based on performance, governance be damned. Academics, proxy advisors, and stock exchanges have questioned over the years whether granting founders dual-class stock that protect them from unruly investors and agitators is just a nice way of entrenching corporate honchos, some of our best friends. But in the past two decades, there's been a sea change with investor acceptance of dual-class companies and new analysis that shows there's both a well-worn path of structuring companies with high votes and low vote stock, and also strong stockholder performance. A new paper by our friends David Berger of Wilson Sonsini and Pierluigi Matera of BU Law and Libra Legal Partners adds to this literature and makes the case that these structures have become the norm for some sectors, and for good reason, they work. Also, these models have become somewhat common in their structure, 10-to-1 ratio of high vote and low vote, and for that, we must praise good lawyering for helping standardize this model, says two lawyers. Look at the incredible successes of the likes of Alphabet, Meta, Airbnb, and Berkshire Hathaway. Do you care what the governance model looks like as long as they perform? Remember Warren Buffett called most directors potted plants and said 90% of the job is picking the CEO. The modern dual-class phenomenon must be evaluated in light of economic performance and interpreted as a reflection of a broader transformation in the norms, expectations, and realities of corporate governance, including a response to the long-standing assumption that if corporations were run for the primary benefit of stockholders, then all stakeholders would benefit. They write in a new piece in the Journal of Corporation Law. Public investors appear willing to accept, and even embrace, governance structures favoring insiders provided the prospects for superior returns justify the associated potential risks with founder control. A study by Jeff Sonnenfeld and Stephen Tien at Yale show that shareholders themselves often prefer firms with strong board control and that companies with dual-class structures frequently outperform single-class companies, whether over 1, 5, or 10-year time horizons. So, where do independent directors or shareholder voices come in? Particularly when the likes of ISS and some big investors have a pretty clear policy of voting against dual-class companies. This is not to downplay the critical importance of good corporate governance and ethics. Strong corporate governance, including board leadership and an ethical framework, are crucial to corporate success. It is just to say that strong corporate governance can be obtained by a variety of different methods and structures. The market has come to recognize this reality and has shown itself willing to accept the risks that alternative governance structures may have in return for greater focus on mission, long-term gains, and ethical and strategic alignment. In short, we contend that performance remains the dominant driver of investor behavior. It's clear that dual-class structures, when properly designed and accompanied by capable leadership, have proven not only viable, but in many cases, superior. In activism news, The Wall Street Journal reports that in the latest push from one of Victoria's Secret's largest investors, BBRC International, the firm sent a letter to the lingerie giant's board seeking a shakeup. The 13% holder called for the removal of the company's chair and addition of its founder, Australian billionaire Brett Blundy. The company, which has struggled since becoming a standalone entity, has faced pressure from activists, including Barrington Capital, before, and both sides noted they have been conversing privately for months without coming to an agreement. Reporters at the deal suggest that with the ongoing government shutdown leading to furloughs at the SEC, an unexpected opportunity has arisen in contested situations. This is regarding the temporary elimination of the bedbug letters, a tactic used by both companies and activists. With this obstacle removed for now, it remains to be seen whether activists will now move faster and put forward more aggressive claims, since there is no regulatory concern to slow the process down. In deal news this week, the Journal scooped Kimberly-Clark's acquisition of Kenvue, a company that is facing intense government scrutiny, with Kenvue's flagship brand Tylenol would mark one of the largest takeovers of the year. The deal, which would create an expansive global health and wellness company, despite it facing multiple challenges for approval, bails out activist investors, as the Journal also reported that they were facing significant potential losses on their investments before the announcement. The Bloomberg staff expanded on the rapidly evolving bidding war for Metsera between Pfizer and Novo Nordisk. The FTC has already noted that Novo's proposed bid may violate the procedural provisions of the Hart-Scott-Rodino Pre-Merger Notification Act. The government agency's letter dated November 4th outlines their concerns for a potential deal, coming in contrast with Pfizer, who had received early termination of the waiting period of the HSR Act before this back-and-forth bidding began. In a wave of food and beverage shakeups, CPG and food companies are pursuing a range of strategies to boost shareholder value, apart from recent waves of investor activism. Starbucks will sell control of its $4 billion China business to Boyu Capital, giving the investor up to a 60% stake, as it seeks to revive growth in a market where its share has slid from 34% to 14%. Denny's agreed to a $620 million buyout by a consortium led by TGI Friday's owner Tri-Artisan Capital, marking another major restaurant chain going private. Meanwhile, Yum Brands is exploring strategic options, including a sale of its struggling Pizza Hut division, after several quarters of declining U.S. sales. On to corporate governance. As we all expected, shareholders cleared the path for Musk to expand Tesla ownership to 25% over the next decade as the company pivots from electric vehicles to an ambitious agenda built on robo-taxis, AI, and humanoid robots. In the land of public offerings, DealBook recently reported on the efforts by SEC Chair Paul Atkins to revive the declining U.S. IPO market, which has seen public listings drop by half since the 1990s. His deregulation strategy focuses on reducing costs and bureaucracy by easing disclosure requirements, restricting ESG shareholder proposals, and permitting companies to mandate arbitration for investor disputes. However, critics argue these changes may diminish transparency and erode shareholder protections, while failing to address private market dominance that keeps companies from going public. Finally, Reuters was the first to report on Jefferson City, Missouri. Based central bank company announced that it was targeting a valuation of up to $5.72 billion in its planned NASDAQ debut. The deal, which aims to raise $426.7 million by offering 17.8 million shares at $21 and $24 each, marks one of the few U.S. bank IPOs since 2008 and further highlights renewed investor appetite for the overall IPO market. From our desk to yours, this weekend is shaping up to be an incredible few days for the gastronomes of New York across the five boroughs. For those of you who remember the magic of Suenos over the course of the early 2000s, you'll be jazzed to hear that chef. Sue Torres is taking a brief respite from her new home in Vero Beach for a two-night pop up in the Village this weekend. Suenos returns 11 years after closing its doors on W17th from Thursday to Sunday. Seatings for the four-course soiree are at 5:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. A guava and cream cheese empanada with mezcal, spiked whipped cream, sounds not only like an ideal dessert to keep warm with on a rainy November weekend, but an ode to Torres' 11-year run at a Chelsea fan favorite. Get your tickets here. Also, for those looking for a quick and exciting day trip, the GPP team is also looking forward to the second annual Rockaway Food Fest. On Sunday, a welcomed addition to the variety of remarkable food gatherings that take place around the city throughout the year. Live music and a combo of Rockaway names including Bungalow Bar, Batsy's, and Crown Square Pizza may sound better than NFL Sunday, especially now that some GPPers' favorite teams have turned their attention to next season. In People Moves this week, Sequoia Capital's Alfred Lin and Pat Grady will become the firm's stewards, succeeding Roelof Botha after leading since 2022. Botha will stay with the firm and on portfolio company boards. Read more. CarMax announced that it cut ties with CEO Bill Nash and that he will be temporarily succeeded by board member David McCrate, who has been named interim president and CEO. Read more. Jim Currier has been named CEO and president of Honeywell's aerospace unit, leading the independently traded company following its planned spin-off. Read more. And after nearly two decades running the global corporate governance team at T. Rowe Price, friend of the firm Donna Anderson has officially announced her retirement. We wish her well. Read more. We have two upcoming events to keep on your calendar. November 21st, Columbia Law's Milstein Center, Conference on M&A and Corporate Governance, New York, NY. February 2-3, WSJ Invest Live, West Palm Beach, FL.